Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Governor Jelly Belly announcing he's running for re-election yesterday, and I'm announcing this morning that Amy Jacobson owes me $100,000.
I'm not. Whoa. $100.
Didn't you want about $100,000?
Right, and then you said no.
Well, I said show me proof of funds, but you know, I said I would put a lien on your home as collateral.
I suggested you putting a lien on my home, but
$100,000. Yeah. It was an expression of your confidence in the view that he wasn't going to run for election because it's a tough job and so on and so forth.
No,
because you fell for the sophistry.
I didn't. I felt for his family, who has been living in Florida for the past 16 months, and they recently returned.
You know, again, I haven't talked to my family completely about this, and I need to spend time with them.
Right.
But do they want to spend time with you?
And I'm sorry, what did I say at the time when you were using that as evidence that he wasn't going to run for re-election?
You
what did
laughed
I say at the
at
time?
Me and you said, Amy.
No, what did I say? What is he doing? So learn the lesson so we don't repeat this.
Okay.
When Lori Lightfoot says she needs to spend time with her family to decide whether or not she's going to run for re-election. The lesson is this. It's very simple. He's using the opportunity as a press event to humanize himself, to say, gosh, I don't know, and have people come and say, no, Governor, we need you, and so on and so forth.
You
know, assemble enthusiasm for his re-election and so forth. This is rinse and repeat. If you've paid attention for 5 minutes of politics generally, Illinois politics particularly, you've seen this story before. Then he throws on the cardigan and says, you know, we've made a lot of progress, but there's still so much more work to do. And I just feel like I can't leave with so much yet left to do.
Well, he released a 3-minute video yesterday.
Saying what? There's so much left to do?
No, the entire 3-minute video centered around the pandemic and nothing else that happened during his first term.
A jump in cases of a deadly mystery virus.
The deadly new virus spreading around the world. How serious is this?
From the beginning, J.B. Pritzker knew we faced a serious threat.
We're ready to put the full weight of the state behind a full-fledged
response.
That's
a lot of weight.
This is coming. We're going to have to live with it for a while. So let's get ahead of this thing.
In Washington, science took a backseat to politics.
Yeah, okay. I mean, honestly.
In Illinois, we knew
this. It's insufferable to watch. But he gets personal, Dan.
When I ran for governor 4 years ago, I could not have imagined that I would end up leading the state through a global pandemic. Look, I may not have gotten every decision right.
Right, exactly.
But at every step along the way, I followed the science.
Well-intended.
Yeah.
He's well-intended. It's tough. It's, you know, fog of war stuff. And his heart was always in the right place. He was always looking out for your interests. And hey, we may have some disagreements. We may not have gotten everything exactly right, but you know I had your back the entire time. That's the message. And
that's,
you know,
sickening.
What? He cruises to re-election. Anybody disagree? Would you like to go double or nothing? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro. Text, and you know why he cruises to re-election.
Why?
There's multiple reasons, but they all sort of come back to the same place.
Because there's no strong Republican candidate up against him.
No. I mean, sort of.
All right, what?
Keep going. That's it?
Because he's got the unions. He paid off all the unions. He gave CTU carte blanche to do whatever they want to do, to strike for any reason whatsoever they can. Mm-hmm. So he's got the union backing, SEIU, CTU.
Well, yes. Yeah,
those are some big dogs.
So, right.
The third political party known as the CTU.
Dancing around it. Yeah.
And.
Mm-hmm. By the way, make that $100. Just give that to Envision Unlimited. In my name.
All right. Well, I've got a check for you.
We'll write it to Macanutt Envision Limited and mail right. it in. Just like Mike on the north side mailed his check in to Maryville Academy on behalf of you.
We're throwing money out, man.
Well, notice the only one who doesn't who writes checks voluntarily, not because he lost bets. Bill in Lincoln Park.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Amy. Okay, the motto is, I will buy four more years. He's not running. He's buying four more years. If Paul Shemp or Jeannie Ives had $25 million, I could tell you who could win that election. But I truthfully think, and this is just my opinion, that some Democrat is going to be psycho enough, not brave, but psycho enough to challenge him and probably give him a good run for it. I hope they do.
No, no one's running.
Wait, hold, Bill. Hold, are you still there?
Yes.
So just for consistency's sake, did Bruce Rauner buy the election?
What do you think? I mean, I don't gamble myself, but he beat Paul.
Pat Quinn.
Quinn, Irish. Yeah, yeah. He beat Pat Quinn. And once again, it took him about 40, 50 million of his money.
70.
And Pritzker, 171 million the first time, and then 35 million far this year.
Yeah, but the denominations, I just want to understand. So if somebody spends a ton of their own money, they're buying the election, regardless of if it's a Republican or Democrat, or they're not buying the election?
I think the Democrats do have an edge. I mean, look at Kim Fox. But it's like you said, mentioned a couple months ago, there's 200,000-300,000 people in Chicago who, you know, they're going to follow the sheep. But it just, I mean, there are sheep that will follow, but that's what it takes. It's going to take a Republican. I think a Republican with money. I think truthfully it's going to take a female and a minority with some fire in her belly and money, millions and millions of dollars to give any kind of edge. And as also, they're not really Republicans to appeal to people in Illinois. They're going to be way on the, you know, they're not going to be in the center. They're going to be to the left. So you could call them Republicans, but, you know, we know what side they're on.
Thanks for the call.
Like, once again, my opinion.
Yeah, no, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Well, that's what we do here. We get people's views on things. Yeah, that's fine. It's you know, in ballpark. All right, well, here's another question. So we'll continue this conversation. Just this is a corollary question. Should the Republican Party formally fold? Should it announce that it is no longer a political party in this state? And create a vacuum for something else to fill it in terms of providing any electoral competition. I'm not kidding. Should it formally say we're disbanding and then let's see what is cobbled together to fill that void and provide electoral competition? That's my question. Should the Republican Party do that? 538.
It's America First with me, Sebastian Gorka, tonight, starting at 10, right before Hugh Hewitt, only on AM 560, The Answer.
Spoon Man for J.B. Pritzker, that seems appropriate.
Spoon Man. Well, he has gained weight since this pandemic began, I think about 50 or 70 pounds. He doesn't look good because yesterday, you know,
now
in his campaign ad, they showed what he looked like when he was freshly elected with his young family, children behind him, and now he looked like he's aged 10 years.
Well, he sacrificed his health for us, and that should be applauded. And by the way, it will be. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Pritzker announcing he's running for re-election. He will get something and like it, which is a second term, in my view. And we're talking about why that might be. And whether or not the question I put to the floor, whether or not the Republican Party should just formally announce that it is disbanding in the state of Illinois, stop pretending like there's electoral competition here, stop pretending there's a particular point to the Republican Party here, and maybe something with a point that could provide competition would fill that void were that to occur. A serious question. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Jeff and Bartlett, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Love the show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Amy, I'd have to say I'm a current and good standing union member, along with a lot of, a lot of my friends. And we do not see on the left because they push their agenda on the union. as individuals, more and more of my people like myself and my friends are hardcore voting on the Republican side versus the Democratic side, just because the unions.
Well, Jeff, hold on. Public sector or private sector union?
Public.
Oh, really?
Wow, that's good news.
So you're SIU, AFSCME, or the teachers' unions? You're one of those three?
I'm sorry. Private. I'm sorry. No.
Oh.
Private.
Yeah. Uh-huh. See, if you're a trade, guy, that's not the same. That's not the same thing. When we say the unions and the union control and that the state is run by the public sector unions, we're talking about AFSCME, SEIU, and the teachers' unions. Trade unions are a whole separate thing, and there's a lot more competition there. But the public sector unions is who runs the show and has run Illinois in the ground. That's who we all are spare parts for, is the public sector unions and their guaranteed salaries and seven-figure pensions.
Correct. And that's a shame because everyone's obviously in it for the money, and they don't see the you know, the downside of, well, screwing the next-door neighbor, per se.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for the call, Jeff.
Think about what he did. He released 4,000 criminals, 64 were murderers, and they're still out and about because until his emergency order ends, they're going to remain free.
Mm-hmm.
10,000 churches closed, zero liquor stores closed, 73,000 people filed for unemployment in just one of those weeks, and 139% increase in reported child abuse cases in Kane County alone.
Well, you go ahead and run against him, because I'm not hearing much from any erstwhile Republican candidate for governor, Republicans generally. And by the way, you know, say, oh, we have to have a candidate against him. Why? Do we have candidates against Tammy Duckworth? Do we have candidates? I'm talking about serious candidates. Do we have serious candidates that are going to provide competition for any of the other constitutional offices? I don't know that there's any. Are there any Republicans even running for Secretary of State in the other constitutional offices?
Not that I know of.
You know, I was talking.
Yeah. Oh, no. Don't tell me.
I was talking to somebody who's very knowledgeable about Illinois politics. And I basically said what I've said to the candidates individually in conversations, as well as I've said on the show. I just said again before the break. You're not going to beat J.B. Pritzker in this environment, on this landscape. Doesn't matter. Don't care. Sorry. I hate to break it to you. That's the reality. And I mentioned some of the names. And this person, very knowledgeable,
okay,
writes about Illinois politics, did not know who, never heard of one of the Republican candidates for governor. Right. Now there's two state senators and one businessman. Did not know one of those three names.
And that's Gary Rabine.
It's remarkable and telling. Tony in Downers Grove.
Well, Dan, there's three reasons here. Despite, you know, the other influences, you got the demographics of the city of Chicago, number one.
Mm.
You got people that think like the people in Lamont who just changed the name of a mascot because that's what they're focused on. And then you have the rest of the majority who think like all of Amy's friends in Lakeview. So you get the trifecta there, and we'll never get a Illinois governor in here.
Well, here's
Pritzker's going to win by a landslide.
Well, I agree with that.
He's not going to win by a landslide.
Yeah, he's going to win by a landslide. Here's the thing, though, Tony. In Downers Grove, your state rep is who?
Yeah, I know, but it's
Anna Stava Murray, who is a Marxist.
I know,
I'm telling the rest of the people. Anna Stava Murray, who's an avowed Marxist in Downers Grove. So here's the thing. Chicago's been a part of the state since 1818. Republicans have been elected statewide. Republicans have had control. It's not a Chicago problem. It's a suburban problem. We lost the Republican Party lost the suburbs, and it lost its any discernible reason for existence. And so there's no path. There's nothing on the landscape. And by the way, to the extent that you could present something that people can't conceive at this point, so you could do something that's paradigm shifting in terms of the presentation of a new and different kind of choice, a new and different kind of path. Is there anybody proposing that? Is there? And if it is, then you describe it to me, because I want to hear specifics. Don't say there is, or I was at a meeting. No. Tell me somebody who's proposing a markedly different path for the party in the state, such that it should stay constituted as and taken seriously. And I look, the new Republican Party chairman, this isn't Don Tracy. He's a good man. He's trying. It's an impossible position he's in. And it's not his job to reconstitute something that has been laid waste to and continues to be laid waste to by people running around calling themselves Illinois Republicans. But tell me, give me a basis to not come to the conclusion that it would be better, literally, to make a public spectacle of closing up shop and then whatever enters that void to replace it. Then at least you have people say, oh, there's something new in this state. Maybe this is a new party organization with a new attitude and a new policy agenda that's not going to play spoils of war politics with Chicago crime families. And maybe that's something I'll consider. The problem is, you know, on the moral issues, you've lost the suburbs, too. And no Republican, well, Darren Bailey will. No Republican otherwise from Darren Bailey, who's had anything to say about COVID and really the moral issues in terms of profile and running for statewide office. It's just that everybody's afraid to take positions on the things that actually motivate people.
Well, and you don't think the 18-year-old voting block is going to change? Well, Governor Pritzker took away everyone's school, their activities, their sports, and those kids were upset, and they can vote now.
18-year-olds don't decide elections. Sorry.
Won't be a vote for Bailey, an anti-Pritzker vote. How can we reward him for this when he destroyed so many kids' lives? Tens of thousands of dollars lost in scholarships. There was no reason. He didn't do his job. He never had a creative idea on his own. He always assigned other people to take care of certain problems.
Okay. So, as I said, you want to run against him, make the case, then you should do that. In terms of talking about the landscape and what people in this state actually think, where the balance lies, the majority of the state disagree with the statement you just made. I don't. The majority of the state do.
Well, shame on them.
And what Republicans have done for so long is just tilt at windmills. This is how it should be. That guy who's in an office I want is bad, and I'm less bad. It has no currency. And
so
now
should we just give
and
up?
And now
or
it's
we do?
Past. It's now it's past post because you've lost any base camp. I mean, other than pockets in central and southern Illinois, that's not going to be enough.
No, you have to win Chicago.
Richard,
get to the governor's mansion.
Richard in Blue Island. You don't have
to win
Chicago.
Dan and Amy.
22% in Chicago. Okay. Not even, really.
Hi, Richard.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Richard.
Oh, yeah, okay. I've got names for two political parties that could take the place of the Republican Party. The first one I would call Limtifa, which rhymes with Antifa, and it stands for Leave Me the F Alone.
Mm-hmm. Antifa, okay.
And the second one would be the Sumful Party, which stands for Stay Out of My Effing Life.
Mm-hmm. A lot of effings in your party names. But okay, all right. All right, thanks, Richard.
It doesn't roll off the tongue easily.
People Who Play by the Rules Party. Or, you know, that's not poetic either. But that's what a paradigm shift would be in this state. That's a change in political culture. That this is a state that's going to be governed by the rule of law, not the rule of men and women. It's going to be for people who play by the rules. It's not going to be the cut it out or cut me in or cut it out political culture. It's not going to be the distribution of spoils of war culture. It's not going to be the get in line for my, you know, special deal, my waiver, my phony baloney job, my seven-figure guaranteed pension. We're going to end that. It's going to be for people who do all the things you're supposed to do to be a good citizen, to raise a family, to educate your kids, to abide the law, to respect authority, to contribute something, both professionally and civically. That party, those people, the people that don't have clout and so get carved up by those who do. I mean, that's a constituency. And it's a constituency the Republican Party has ignored because so many Republicans, so many of these Vichy Republicans are the cut it out, cut me in or cut it out types. And so what's the point of that? The point of that is to guarantee super minority in perpetuity. The point of that is to essentially be a legal fiction that exists only as an abstraction on a ballot, a descriptor on a ballot. But there's no real foundation there. There's no structure there. And for good people who want to run as candidates, well, then you have to reinvent the wheel. You have to have, tens or hundreds of millions of dollars, or be able to generate that kind of money, which is not easy to do. And you have to be very creative in terms of how you build a team from zero effectively. It's difficult to do in one election cycle. It's almost impossible. Mike in Plano.
Hey, guys. The only hope I see, and this is a long shot, is if you have like a Schwarzenegger in California or Jesse Ventura in Minnesota type scenario where you had somebody with high name recognition that had a competent platform that was able to woo over people. But there's another point I wanted to make real quick, Dan. You were touching on this a second ago. Mark Curran, who is the Senate candidate last year from the suburbs, and he used to call your guys' show trolling for attention all the time. Well, a few weeks ago, he commented on social media about that Glenbard South principal that goofed up the Pledge of Allegiance, which I think was on purpose. But his comment was, after she apologized, was, he who's not sinned cast the first stone, meaning, he forgive her, it's okay. She screwed it up. And I told him, that right there is why you're a failed Senate candidate. It is because you and other suburban rhinos surrendered the culture to the left. You lost control of your institutions because you constantly gave people like her the benefit of the doubt.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Elliot on the South Side.
Good morning. I just wanted to make the comment about how there is a young base, I guess, young families in the state that are making the shift from Democratic to Republican. When I was younger, I voted Democratic pretty much my whole life. As I got married, started having a family, seeing the conditions that the state is in and what happened last year, I've definitely made the shift to Republican. So
welcome.
Look forward to following that route going forward. And the only problem is, unfortunately, a lot of young families like myself are talking about leaving. So
exactly.
We'll see if what happens and if we're able to stick around and raise our family.
Elliot, who are you going to vote for governor?
Rabin, more than likely.
You mean Gary Rabin?
Rabin, yeah.
Yeah.
Rabin, I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's fine. I was just expecting so much more from Gary. And he's a friend of the show. I've known him and his family, and you are very good friends with him. And where is he? What's fundraising, email blasts? We're used to being reminded of who the candidates are, and that's not happening.
Lewis on the South Side.
Good morning, Dan. Hello?
Yeah. Go ahead, Lewis.
Hi, Lewis.
Oh, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. Okay, I was going to make a comment to Amy, but I'm not going to do that. What I'm going to say is that there's a saying, and this is a saying, never let a good pandemic go to waste, okay? And we should have saw the icing on the donut, because Pritzker, he won't go nowhere because we got Krispy Kremes. And also about this new party, there won't be a new party because you have to look at what what Kamala Harris said. Okay, she says there's no Kinko's, in the suburbs.
In rural areas.
There's no Kinko's out in the urban areas. And so what she was saying is that if you look at the state of Illinois, the illiteracy rate is real high. So how are they going to go to a Kinko's if they can't read?
All right. Thanks for the call, Lewis. Tom in Blue Island.
Morning, Dan and Amy. Dan, I'm of the impression of a lot of people think that what you're saying is tongue-in-cheek, but it's not.
It's not tongue-in-cheek.
Republicans.
Not tongue-in-cheek.
I agree totally. Republicans in this state are considered Democrat-lite. what's it, Rauner knew he was going to lose, yet he still kneecapped Jeannie Ives. As a Republican, why would I take anyone that would do that seriously against, you know, someone of Pritzker's ilk? Illinois is a microcosm of what the Biden administration is trying to do to the whole country. And as far as starting over, yeah, that's... Trump lost Illinois supposedly by 11 points, whatever. So I'd say maybe that's 5 or 6 or 7. So there is support there. And I'm not talking about a Trump candidate. I'm just talking about someone that's willing to stand up against the establishment.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about
and
Rodney
if you wanted
Davis?
To run a, if you wanted to run a light candidate against Pritzker, he could run as a bull moose candidate, Dan. Get it?
Right. All right. Thanks, Tom.
I mean, what if, you know, Rodney Davis, there's talk that he might lose his congressional seat and then run for governor. Is that going to move the needle? People's name recognition, they know who he is.
Do you know who he is?
I know that he's on this January 6th committee now, for the insurrection committee he was named.
Rodney's a nice guy, Central Illinois congressman.
I know he's from Central Illinois, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know.
What legislation he's authored, I don't know. I don't.
Is he going to move the needle? There's no evidence of that. I mean, you know, it's like I know a lot of these guys, have been friendly with these guys over the years. Friendly, I don't necessarily consider them friends, just know them from being in this small bubble. You know, so I don't mean to necessarily pile on, but just apply the same standard we try to apply to discussions of policy related to COVID response and anything else. I mean, what does the record look like? What's the evidence to support the claim? What's the evidence to support the claim for these candidates? What's the evidence to support the claim that the Republican Party should continue to pretend to be a going concern? Or make the case that it is a going concern and should continue, and that there's some upside that's right around the corner? If not, then why wouldn't you think of doing something significant, drastic, take evasive action? What is it exactly that is being protected? What's the value of this thing that you think you're protecting? Nobody asks those questions, so you don't get answers, so things just limp along, and I do mean limp. Anna and Elgin. Hi, Anna.
Anna.
Hi.
Hi. You're on the air.
How are you?
We're great. How are you?
Oh, great. Hi. I'm doing good. But I do have a question more for you, Amy, specifically, and Dan, you too, if you can answer. What would you recommend we do about our school that's denying all of our religious exemptions for the vaccine?
Do you go to a public school or a private?
It's a private school. It's Loyola.
Oh,
and what are they demanding?
Wait. Loyola in Wilmette or Loyola the University?
Sorry, Loyola University, Chicago.
Yeah.
Same thing that's happening at DePaul.
They're accepting. They're accepting exemptions at DePaul. They're not accepting any at Loyola.
I would get with Alliance Defending Freedom and talk about perhaps. A litigation play against them, you know, public interest firm like Alliance Defending Freedom, and do that.
And so we sent in, you know, threats for legal action, all of this, and we've been denied everything, or they don't answer us.
Yeah, well,
yeah, no, Alliance Defending Freedom definitely
get a public interest law firm that knows what they're doing involved, and see if you can't get some answers from Loyola. That's what I do. Thanks for the call, Anna. Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. What if they move to mandate vaccines in order to access public spaces? Then would you get vaccinated if you haven't already been?
312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
No less a Troika than Geraldo, Joy Reid, and Dr. Uche Blackstock, who's the CEO, not a Mel Brooks character, the CEO of Advancing Health Equity. That conversation on MSNBC.
Dr. Blackstock, let's go to this one. Geraldo, who I don't usually agree with, said something I think is very true. He tweeted, you know, hearing crazy talk on cable TV right now about folks having the constitutional right not to get vaccinated. He's like, that's true. They may be dopey, but they do have that right. That's true. We too have rights to deny the unvaccinated access to our homeschool or business. Is the way to get people to get vaccinated the way that France did it? Said, fine, you don't want to get vaccinated? You can't go to public events. You can't get on a cruise. You can't come to this business. You can't come to the party. Is that the way to do it in your view?
You know what? I think so. I think the Biden administration has not wanted to wade into those legal waters, but I think they need to put the pressure on employers, on healthcare facilities, to mandate vaccines. And we actually know when we survey the unvaccinated, there is a significant proportion of them who say they will take the vaccine if it's mandated by their employer or if it influences whether or not they're able to go to a sporting event or on a flight. And so we know that's going to make a difference. And so no pun intended, but I think vaccine mandates are going to move the needle for us.
Vaccine mandates to move the needle. What do you think? Oh, also mask mandates to move the needle, too. The American Academy of Pediatrics, an organization of 67,000 primary care pediatricians, recommending that kids over the age of two should wear masks at school regardless of their vaccination status.
Two through high school.
Yes.
Yeah. So here we go again with cover. And the only saving grace is if you live in a state that has banned mask mandates, such as Utah. And Texas. But here in Illinois, yeah, one of the doctors that is part of the AAP is Dr. Allison Tothy. She's from University of Chicago. Here's why she voted for full masking, regardless of vaccinations.
Even if we know that kids don't get as sick as adults do, they're still at risk for getting illnesses, days missed of school. Kids can get the long-haul COVID that adults do.
That was her reasoning behind voting for that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Somebody could also walk in front of a car. There's inherent risks when you leave your home. If it just saves one life, Dan. I mean, this is so ridiculous what we're doing to our children. Here she is again.
North Star is keeping children safe.
Yeah,
that's the bottom line.
Yeah, bottom line.
And we make recommendations mm-hmm. that sometimes yeah. appear more conservative to some parents. Sometimes they appear not conservative enough to some parents.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, I understand. You're not against keeping children safe, are you? It is worth noting, and this was pointed out by one of our listeners on Twitter, the American Academy of Pediatrics, on their page, under our supporters, the AAP Catch Program is made possible through the generous support of Pfizer, Inc.
Oh, follow the money.
I mean,
follow the money.
I don't want to engage in conspiracy theories, but there certainly is a potential conflict there. The appearance of a conflict, which, you know, in most professions, the ethical standards is to avoid even the appearance of a conflict of interest. So you're thanking Pfizer for their generous donations to the programs that the association runs while you're taking the position, essentially, of vaccination 2+ and masks 2+, and let's keep this thing going out of an abundance of caution.
And the AAP yesterday said that the honor system's not working. That's why everyone needs to mask up.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Well,
CPS, by the way, hasn't made a decision on whether or not to mask mandate for the fall.
Yeah.
Just we're waiting. And today, Dr. Awardi and Mayor Lightfoot are going to give us an update on COVID.
Waiting with bated breath for that.
Yeah, I'll be there.
Steve in Northwest Indiana.
Yeah, I heard a guy on an alternative station talk about your station. He mentioned your station. It was kind of funny.
Oh, yeah?
This guy's from Arizona or something, but he was talking about cleaning up his emails and everything, but he mentioned, you go, oh, let me go through here and see what I have here. Oh, there's an email from 560, you know, and it was just kind of weird how I heard you guys mentioned from way out of nowhere.
Well, okay. What was the context? But all right, well,
I'm sure it was complimentary.
Is there? Yeah. Well, he was just trying to get rid of his junk. He said, anyways.
Oh, devastating.
It seems to be like central
sounds
command
like
a, control.
That's sort of the sort of witticism news. I miss. Apparently, God, wow. I'm gonna have to see if I can have somebody here pull that just for my own personal enjoyment. Okay, I'm sorry, Steve. Sorry for
I
the digression.
Tell you the station, if you want to hear.
No, I think I got it. Yeah, I think I got
RBN.
It.
RBN. You ever heard of RBN, Republic Broadcasting Network?
No.
Well, that's who it was. Anyways.
Oh, okay. All right.
So okay. Anyways,
okay.
There seems to be a central command and control over all the news. Everybody uses the same phrases. You know, it's gun violence instead of gang violence or whatever else you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But every station, no matter how conservative it might be, has liberal news. And where does this all come from?
Well, I don't know about that. Thanks for the call, Steve. I mean, I catch some of the news that we pipe in from Fox. And yeah, I mean, they fall into the trap of the ever devolving AP style book and some of the phraseology that you're describing. There's no question. Everybody agrees that we're not going to call things what they are. And so that you see it happens. And conservatives are susceptible to that, too. I mean, think about what we do with pronoun usage in the era where gender is a choice. Are we consistent on that? Are we consistent on marriage redefinition as the way to describe the Obergefell Supreme Court decision? Marriage redefinition. It's not gay marriage. It's an oxymoron. It's marriage redefinition. Do we do that? No. Pro-life or anti-choice? A lot of conservatives, self-identifying conservatives, fall into the trap of using the left's lingo. This is why language is so important. Or this is why I say, and I'm not the only one, that language is so important. It conveys our understanding of what is. And this is why the left so focuses on language, and we sort of scoff it off. You know, there's no such thing as a shark attack. It's an interaction with the shark. And that is, that, you know, at the end of the silliness spectrum, but it's to a larger point. You redefine the language, you corrupt the language, you corrupt man. You redefine the language, you can redefine what it even means to be a sentient, sapient being on this mortal coil. All right. So
Well, listen, Asian carp is being rebranded.
Yeah, right.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service rebranded the freshwater fish, you know, that's been wreaking havoc here as invasive carp. Quote, we wanted to move away from any terms that cast Asian culture and people in a negative light.
Stop Asian carp hate. Yeah, I got it.
What is next? Somebody put on Twitter, what, is black coffee next? Somebody joked around, too, that you're going to take the white out of white socks. They're just going to be called socks.
Jim and poor Charlotte.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. So thank God I moved to Florida, and we're in a state that's not going to mandate that. Has anybody looked at the VAERS website? There's over 10,000 deaths from this vaccine, from my understand.
Well, it's self-reporting, and you have to go through some of that. But, I mean, there's the suggestion that there's at least a correlation between taking the vaccine and deaths. The VAERS is self-reporting. It's a small percentage of all the adverse outcomes. We know this from talking to experts who are familiar with that system. There's other government tracking, too. Martin Kaldor from Harvard Medical School talked to us about that, may provide even more insight. But, yeah, there's not. You know, you'd have a conversation about adverse outcomes and is to, I don't know, be a COVID denier. Thanks for the call, Jim. And oh, by the way, that's even after what? Pfizer and Moderna put FDA mandated warning labels on the vaccines with respect to myocarditis in young people because of the incidence, particularly among young men. And yet we're running headlong into vaccinations plus mask for 2+ without any consideration for the trade-offs for those actual individual kids. But that's to offer such a suggestion is to be recklessly irresponsible. It's to be like Facebook and killing people or I mean, not exactly killing people. Sort of killing people.
Maybe precisely what I said. I'm glad you asked me that question. One, I had just read that on the Facebook pointed out that it was pointed out that Facebook, of all the misinformation, 60% of the misinformation came from 12 individuals. That's what the article said.
12 people.
So I was asked that question about what do I think is happening? Facebook isn't killing people. These 12 people are out there giving misinformation. Anyone listening to it is getting hurt by it. It's killing people. It's bad information. My hope is that Facebook, instead of taking it personally, that somehow I'm saying Facebook is killing people, that they would do something about the misinformation, the outrageous misinformation about the vaccine.
So is that clear now? Facebook is not killing people by themselves. Yeah, they're just an accomplice to murder.
And according to Facebook, 85% of their users have been or want to be vaccinated, compared to Biden's goal of 70% by 4th of July. But yeah, he wants
that apples
back
and oranges.
Well, who
cares what Facebook has to say?
They wanted to defend their reputation. They're not murderers.
They don't have a reputation. They're all in liege with one another on this Orwellian misinformation, expunging misinformation campaign. Facebook already does it. The Biden administration just wants them to do it more. That's not a disagreement. Not in principle, at least. Greg in Jefferson Park.
Good morning, guys. Yeah, you got that right. You know, I take my mom down to Rush every week, and they have been losing nurses and doctors, but more nurses in droves. Yesterday, the one of what used to be three RNs in the clinical office that we go to is the only one left. And I was talking to her, they're getting somebody else that we actually know from previous experience there from another floor in the hospital. And that floor in the hospital is short 9 RNs. And, you know, I was asking her, I said, so
why?
You know, what are these people going to other hospitals or, you know, other practices elsewhere? And she goes, well, you know, some of them are, but at least half of them are just because of COVID, they've had it with nursing and they're done and they're out. I'll tell you, you know, and if that problem is, you know, nationwide, that is a very serious problem that is going to affect us big time medically.
Well, did they leave for the fear of COVID or because they were overworked during COVID?
Well, first of all, I mean, we have nursing shortage in this country pre-COVID.
Before, yeah, we did.
Russ in southern Wisconsin.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Thanks for taking my call.
Morning.
I'm looking for actually a religious exemption due to the abortifacients and all three of the available vaccines on point one. And point two, I've had several friends who've actually had them and are reporting blood clots after the fact when they actually encounter the disease later.
Thanks for the call. I mean, you know, the U.S. Catholic Conference of Bishops has made a statement essentially okaying the mRNA vaccines. Okaying the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, not the mRNA vaccines, on that issue of, you know, testing of fetal cell lines in development of the vaccines. But, I mean, it's an argument you can make with respect to, you know, whoever you would need to make it before, in terms of an employer or a university or Candace in Mount Pleasant.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
Sorry, I forgot my train of thought. I'm sorry.
That's not like you, Candace.
I know. Sorry. Well, you guys take calls so quickly. I was talking to my dog. Okay.
All right.
Alex Berenson was... on his website, he's been talking about the fact that it seems like the vaccine doesn't work after about 3 months. Did you guys see the latest data on his website?
I haven't seen that on Berenson's site. It's an open question. I haven't seen any new research that's comprehensive in nature that has any sort of new range of expected duration of the immunization, you know, at the 95% confidence interval. But I mean, we're already on to pushing the booster shots to deal with the Delta variant and so forth.
So what if the new variant comes from people who are vaccinated?
Well, I mean,
well, we know people who've been vaccinated that have caught COVID.
Well, of course, it's not a lot of breakthrough cases.
Yeah, but they most of them don't have to be hospitalized.
Yeah, it's not. It's, yeah. Oh, okay. Thanks for the call, Candace. I mean, yes.
Nothing's 100%. What? I got a hangnail.
Ken in Plainfield.
I learned it from Don Wade in Roma.
Don Wade used to nail file during
the show.
He'd
file his nails while she was talking. Mm-hmm.
Ken in Plainfield.
You tune out when I talk.
I'm sorry, you said something? Hey. Ken?
Yeah, I hate to sound like a broken record for those who remember what that is. I've talked to you about before about this. I had Guillain-Barré syndrome, which they said it was perfectly safe to take the shot up till 2 weeks ago. And now they're saying, no, don't take the shot. So, again, what does someone like me who doesn't want to risk another debilitating illness do when you can't go anyplace without the COVID passport?
Thanks, Ken.
Let not your heart be troubled. Listen to me, Sean Hannity. I love the latest news and what it all means for you. It's coming up at 2 right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Joe Biden saying his multi-trillion dollar spending plans will reduce inflation in the years ahead.
Oh, that helps now.
Well, it's also, I mean, there's just so much silly about that statement, so much ignorant about that statement. Our experts believe, and the data shows, that most of the price increases we've seen were expected and expected to be temporary. That's not true. In fact, his own budget office forecast inflation in 21 and 22 at about half of what it's running currently. Good piece by Andy Kessler in Wall Street Journal, How to Be an Anti-Capitalist. We spent so much time talking about being an anti-racist, which is to say a racist. This is how to be an anti-capitalist, which is how to be really an anti-capitalist. Start by paying people to do nothing. 1.8 million workers have turned down jobs because of generous unemployment benefits. Anti-capitalists then shut pipelines, except Russian ones, and suspend drilling leases in parts of Alaska to help send oil prices above $70 a barrel. An anti-capitalist would next restrict capital formation. Enter President Biden's proposed capital gains tax rate increases. Add the Federal Trade Commission's roadblocks to mergers. The anti-capitalist limit speech, open borders, mess with education, ruin health care, defund the police. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He writes that this is just economic malpractice, like the Fed insisting that June's 5.4% inflation rate is transitory while it monetizes deficits by slurping up treasuries and mortgages to keep interest rates near zero and prices keep rising. How to be an anti-capitalist, the Joe Biden administration. For more on this, pleased to be joined by our friend Jim Urio, analyst for Fox Business and also the proprietor of Brandt's in scenic Palatine, Illinois. Jim, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Palatine is scenic, isn't it? Thank you for mentioning that.
Yes, it is.
And he has some new items on his menu, by the way.
Oh, yeah, fish tacos. Yes. Don't walk.
Okay, don't walk for the fish tacos. All right, very good. So the spending plans, the spend $2 trillion here and $3 trillion there, will reduce inflation in the years ahead, Jim.
Well, this what's troubling to me is that these politicians now, it seemed like when we were kids, they at least had to kind of skirt around the truth. Now they just look into the camera and say the opposite of what's true. And to me, that's incredibly troubling. He made a comment yesterday that said there's no serious economist who worries about inflation or something like that. As we said, I can grab you a handful of independent economists, and I'll guarantee you that 3 out of 4 is very concerned about inflation. So it's just absolute nonsense. And when they start, there's something very funny, too. But because we always talk on the show about modern monetary theory, and their belief is that they can spend as much money as they want, deficit spending, and the only time to raise taxes is if inflation starts to run away. So that's one of the reasons, by the way, that he tries to talk down inflation, because he doesn't want anything to get away of absolutely exorbitant spending that they're just about to do. But the point is of MMT is that you raise taxes when you see inflation. So what you're going to do to the top, let's say quartiles, that when they start to notice that everything they're buying is starting to go up in price, and then all of a sudden their taxes are increased too, those politicians aren't going to get voted in again. So the only way MMT
DNC works is that we don't have elections anymore and just elect people for life. And I'm not sure that's going to settle well in anyone's stomach.
Well, so the Dow dropped 726 points yesterday, and it felt like deja vu with COVID all over again. So what's driving down the market, Jim?
Well, I'm always going to say it starts with market position. It starts with too many people on the long side who are not calculating risk. The fundamental story just kind of is the thing that pushes it. Now, here's what really irritates me. Everywhere I look, it says worries about the Delta variant are driving stocks down. That's not what's driving stocks down. Worrying about the government's just moronic response to the pandemic itself and the Delta variant more specifically is what worries the stock market. But realistically, when we go down, you know, 800 Dow points in a day, that's because too many people were forgetting that stocks go down and all of a sudden they're like, oh, wow, we can actually lose money on this too.
But going back on the inflation piece that too, though, I mean, particularly as it relates to what the market may look like a year from now. I mean, it seems to me that the fundamental difference here with inflation is that interest rates are not going to be allowed to reflect the true inflation rate.
Well, that's interesting that you bring that up, because I've been arguing about that for a couple of months, is that the market, everyone thinks the stock market hates inflation and hates when they see inflation. No, they hate when they believe the Fed is going to address inflation or the federal government can address inflation. Now, we heard from the federal government yesterday saying we are perfectly willing to ignore it and even pretend it's not there at all. And we've heard similar things from the Fed as well. So that's what the stock market, that's why I'm still relatively bullish the stock market. As long as the Fed and the government just pretend it's not there and keep their head in the sand, which I mean, are they really as incompetent to believe the things they're saying? That's a question I ask myself. I guess it doesn't matter very much because their actions are what's important. And I don't think the Fed's raising rates for quite a while.
And so, so people should be, you know, I don't want to, you know, promote blowing up bubbles, but people should be borrowing to buy hard assets.
I'm never going to say that because I've seen it end terribly two different times in our lifetime. What I will say is this, is that I'm not particularly concerned about bubbles anywhere that I mean, I think we're blowing up bubbles pretty much everywhere. But until I see, you know, at the Thanksgiving table, several of my family members talking about how they borrowed money to buy crypto or they borrowed money to be rehabbing homes, and I see anecdotally weak hand money slipping into things, I'm not worried right now about bubbles bursting. Remember, I'm not giving advice to mom and pop. I have to know my clients' risk parameters and the depth of their pockets before I start telling them to borrow things and buy hard assets. But I do like hard assets, by the way.
Okay. The good news, though, more government stimulus. So we're told the child tax credit, $250 per child each month, direct deposit in your account. You're a working family with two kids. You're going to get $500 a month in your bank account starting this month. And, you know, that's going to drive, at least, which is good for me, it's going to drive, you know, the stock prices of places like Amazon and other retailers.
Of course. But it's, people don't realize. And I think, and again, you know that I'm a little bit sinister regarding everybody's motives on this. But I believe that the whole Great Reset they've been talking about is a large part of universal basic income. So every little step along the way, paying people to have children, paying people to stay home from work. You mentioned paying people to stay home from work. Goldman Sachs just a couple of weeks ago talked about how one thing that the hurdle to the economic expansion is unusually generous unemployment benefits. Now, for them, you remember, Goldman doesn't want to run afoul of the federal government in any way. They've been the bad guy a lot of times before. When they're releasing a statement like that, there's a lot of guys going, should we really say this, or are we going to get in trouble? So if they're for them to say that, they truly, truly believe it and probably believe it more aggressively than they're saying it.
Well, this child tax credit, I mean, which is universal basic income, it's supposed to end in December. But Nancy Pelosi's already talking about, well, I want this to go on indefinitely.
I can quote Milton Friedman right now, my favorite economist. There is nothing so permanent as a temporary government program.
That's right.
Right?
I mean,
but
to put that in perspective, too, the contact tracers, and I know you guys know this, but I don't know we talk about it enough. There's still like 600 contact tracers being employed by Illinois, and their program is funded through all of next year. Now, I knew a guy who was a contact tracer. I don't think they do anything. They don't want people to talk to them. They get paid the same amount of money either way. But anyway, there's nothing so permanent as a temporary government program. So I think it may go away, but that's only with an absolute fight.
But it's more than 500. I mean, if you live, say, in, you know, rural Wisconsin, and you have three kids under the age of six, you're making $900 a month. Why would that would not motivate you to go out and get a job? Because everywhere, you know, I've been driving around the state lately and in the state of Iowa, everywhere we go, there is a help wanted sign for anything. And they list the job positionings, kitchen, washer, server. And, there's so many places that are suffering right now because they can't find helpers.
No doubt about it. Particularly, I think it affects in like shift work and temporary work and things like that, because someone who is getting, that money in rural Wisconsin may be like, well, this is almost enough. Maybe I'll take a few hours here and there. But what we want to really kickstart the economy is people hungry for work. And I don't want people hungry for food. We have too developed an economy for that to ever be. But it has to be slightly uncomfortable to not work. That's just part of a dynamic economy. That's an integral part.
Speaking as we were earlier about bubbles, before the pandemic, we were concerned about the amount of student debt that is piling up. Now, forbearance for paying back student loans has been extended to October of this year. And the portion of borrowers in forbearance is at about 57%. The rest include borrowers who are still in school, who've gotten deferments or who've defaulted. Is there any concern about the student debt bubble, if you will?
Well, sure. You know, when the government took over the lending of student loans, close to 10 years ago, if you didn't see where this was going, you're just not paying attention at all. There was always going to be that they were going to use it as a tool to buy votes. Do I think it's a problem? Yeah. Do I think it's an economic positive if all of a sudden everybody's student loans were wiped out? Sure. But do I think it's a complete moral hazard going forward? I remember talking to my niece, and I hope people don't hate me for this. This is about 8 or 9 years ago. And I said, take as much student loan as you want. Someone's going to come and pay that off in a while. And she's like, well, you're against that kind of thing. I said, of course I'm vehemently against that kind of thing. But if it's going to happen anyway, I'm just telling you what your opportunities might be.
The
way it is.
I hate you, Jim Urio.
I know. I
hate
I'm
your
sorry
guts.
About that.
I'm never talking to you again.
So might as well get there now.
Well, right. So, I mean, this is what Jim Perry, our friend of the show at Arbor Research, says. You know, at some point, and he was talking about this in the context of U.S. debt, but, you know, at some point, debt that doesn't have to be repaid becomes credit. And so that's what college loans are.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's just it's beautiful. Huh? So the whole thing is so stupid. I had someone who was very close to me work for one of those trade school places. I don't want to say the name of it. But as soon as the government took over student loans, they had a whole department who would go out to areas that was high concentration of homeless people and sign them up for government-funded student loans, of which there was very little, to prove. All you had to say was, I want to go to school to be a chef. And then all of a sudden, they'd collect that 30 grand and move on to the next person, knowing full well that many of those people wouldn't come to school. So to point out it's going to be abused when the government takes over a program, I'm like, why do we have to point that out at this point in time? I mean, the only thing the government's good at maybe is war and building a few roads between states.
Well, if I could just connect consequences to this woozy dreamland you live in, where you think people can just take on debt and then somebody else is going to pay it back without consequence, Jim Urio.
Yep. I was right, though.
So going back to Mark Perry's research from University of Michigan, so inflation over the last 20 years, overall inflation, 60%. College tuition and fees, the increase, about 170%. So almost 3x the overall inflation rate. Why is that? Well, because of dynamics like we're talking about here. So here's what happens is that middle income families that make too much money to qualify for some scholarships that are available, they take on debt and then they also repay the debt. So the people without clout, without inside deals, they're the ones who get really hammered by the government subsidizing this system in the way that it does.
Remember, the government took over the student loan thing to make college more affordable.
Of course,
that's
it did.
They took
yeah.
over a lot
How's
of
that
the
going?
Things
yeah.
too. That's why they take over Amtrak 50 years ago, and they've lost. I think they've lost money every single year since they've owned it. Everything they touch happens that way. But as far as back to the college, why it's gone up in prices? If you see the number of administrators and the salary for administrators that's happened over the last 30 years, it's mind-boggling how much it is. And even if you go to college towns, there's a lot of big houses and country clubs.
clubs, and there's a lot of administrators making a lot of money while our kids have a difficult time paying.
Jim Urio, analyst for Fox Business, the proprietor of Brandt's in Palatine. Jim, thanks as always.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Coming up on Chicago's Morning Answer,
our old friend KT McFarland on Cuba 707.
All right, Freedom Night is coming up, and it's a great way to show your support and meet other conservative leaders in your area. It is Thursday, this Thursday, folks, July 22nd. Join Jeannie Ives and other conservative leaders for Freedom Night at the Abbey Resort in Lake Geneva. Get your tickets and find out more at oneundergod.org. That's the number oneundergod.org.
All right. Well, the Biden administration's border policy continues to produce the expected results. Customs and Border Protection reporting that its agents had some 188,000 migrant encounters in June. CBP has made more than a million arrests at the border so far this fiscal year, which is more than any full year total since 2005. The number of families trying to cross reached 55,000, almost 56,000 for the month, which was a 25% increase from May. And unaccompanied children encountered rose to more than 15,000. That's all because of, you know, wink and a nod, don't come, but we're not going to do anything if you do. And this against the backdrop of a federal judge finally getting around to concluding what President Obama said when he did it, which is that the DACA program is illegal. It's remarkable that it's taken this long. Yes, DACA is illegal. There's no constitutional authority to do what the president did. Joe Obama, first two terms, now being visited on Joe Obama, third term, with respect to border policy and the DACA program and what, if anything, Congress is going to do. For a conversation on this and all matters geopolitical, please be joined again by KT McFarland, former First Deputy National Security Advisor to President Trump and author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, thanks for being with us again. Appreciate it.
It's great to be with both of you. Thank you.
Some of these things, it's sort of like talking about violent crime in big cities. I don't know that the issue is so complicated. It's just trying to, I guess... communicate to the American public that you just have people. I know this is hard to understand, but you have people that are willing to allow for the chaos at the border or the chaos in big city America for political reasons.
Yeah, I think Governor DeSantis of Florida said it best. He said that this just has a lot of political motivation in what they're doing. I mean, they've opened the border. The southern border with Mexico, they've opened the border, and people are just walking in. And then they're immediately being asked, where do you want to go? And they're given a bus ticket or even put on a plane, and then they're sent all around the country to where they choose to go. Now, a lot of them are now choosing to go, interestingly, to Florida. But, you know, they're coming in. Who knows what they're bringing in with them? If the human smugglers, the coyotes, can bring in people for a certain amount per head, they can also bring in fentanyl. They can also bring in other potential weapons, and they're certainly able to bring in disease with them. So I think it's a humanitarian crisis at the border. Anybody who's seen the pictures is just horrified at the coyotes, who are the human smugglers, just throwing toddlers off walls if their parents don't pay the fee. And we're horrified at the potential medical issue and public health issue. And then there's the humanitarian issue as well as the economic issue. I mean, these people are coming across the border for economic opportunity. They're being given checks. They're being housed. They're being given everything they would like to have in a modern society. And yet it's not clear that the United States, which is already trillions of dollars in debt, can really afford this. And then I would contrast it with the attitude towards the Cubans. You know, the Biden administration has said, if you Cuban demonstrators, if you pro-democracy demonstrators get on boats and try to come to Florida, we're going to have the U.S. Coast Guard turn you away.
Yep.
And
yet the political prisoner, the people who are fleeing Cuba, are not doing it for economic grounds. These are people who are fearing political repression, you know, getting beaten, getting thrown in jail, getting probably potentially even, you know, killed.
But the Biden administration,
the definition is political refugees. That's who we let in.
Yeah, and sorry for interrupting you, KT, but I mean, in the Biden administration is saying those Americans who want to go and help the Cubans and take their own boats because they're supposed to launch off of Key West today, that they could face 10 years in prison.
Yeah, it's all political. And Governor DeSantis didn't say it, but I'll say it. It's because the thought that these pro-democracy demonstrators from Cuba are probably going to come to the United States, work hard, vote Republican. And the Biden administration thinks that the Hispanics who are coming across the border, or the Haitians, or the Iranian, whoever is coming across the southern border, are somehow going to vote Democrat because they're going to be given all these benefits by the Biden administration. I think they're wrong on all counts, but particularly wrong with the policy towards Cuba. And we should. The other thing that I think is the bigger picture on the Cuba immigration issue is, why are we not helping the Cuban people who are demonstrating against their communist government? I never thought I would live to see the day when the United States government is somehow supporting the communist government of Cuba and turning a cold shoulder to the pro-democracy, anti-communist demonstrators in the streets of Cuba. The majority of the Cuban people don't want a communist government. They want democracy, free markets, and they want to get rid of their dictatorship government. And somehow the Biden administration is turning a blind eye to that.
We
have this anomaly.
I do love the Biden administration sending a warning to Americans using their own boats to help people that are fleeing political repression. Good thing Joe Biden wasn't at Dunkirk. That could have turned out differently. So with respect to Cuba, what's your assessment? We've seen these sorts of protests, several times over the years of the Castro and the Castro legacy of dictators have lorded over that country. Do you see this as being sustained and really potentially toppling the regime there?
Yeah, I think this one is different because this one, several things have changed. When President Obama opened U.S. relations with Cuba, I think the unintended consequences that the Cuban people, who had prior to that been living in isolation, prior to that they didn't know how their relatives or the rest of the world was living, and the Cuban people that have seen now, this is how our relatives, our cousins who went to America, they're thriving, and we're not. We're in a country that is keeping us poor, poorly educated, taking our pharmaceuticals now. We have no public health system, and yet we're a wealthy country, potentially a wealthy country. So I think that the Cuban people all of a sudden saw they had an option. And then, secondly, the difference is that this time it was spontaneous demonstrations all around the country, amplified by social media, where somebody in one town said to their cousin in another town, "We're going in the streets, we've had enough." And the third thing is that they were willing to do it at all ages, young, old, but they were willing to do it knowing that the Cuban secret police force would come out and beat them up and intimidate them and go back to their homes and destroy their homes. So the fact that you've got this large number of people who demand a better life, I think this is a pre-revolutionary situation only if the United States helps, not by sending in the Marines. All these people want is their internet turned back on. The Cuban right. government shut it down. All they want is their internet turned back on. They'll take it from there. And yet the Biden administration, which would be the easiest thing to do, Dan, the easiest thing to do, we could put a couple of hot air balloons or some drones, and we could reestablish the internet in Cuba, and then the Cuban people take it from there.
But aren't they fighting, too, for more vaccines and better health care?
Yes, that is part of it, Amy, and that is probably the tipping point of it. But here's what happened in Cuba. The Cuban government, when they were offered the vaccine by the UN, by the U.S., by China, by Russia, fellow communist countries, they turned it down. They said, no, we're so smart. We're going to develop a Cuban vaccine, and we're going to be the savior of the world. Well, how do you think that turned out? Pretty badly. There is no Cuban vaccine that's been approved. And at the same time, the Cuban government took whatever medical supplies they were getting, and then they sold them to other countries in South and Central America. keeping the profits for the ruling class, the ruling communist elite in Cuba. So they, so the government has so mismanaged the health care issue for the Cuban people. And again, they're living like kings, but the Cuban people are starving.
I'll look forward to Michael Moore's sequel to Sicko that, you know, documents all of this. You know, another situation that is turning out very sadly is Hong Kong. And there was this good piece over at Substack by a Hong Kong and London-based writer named Archie Hall, basically saying goodbye to Hong Kong. He notes that the Hong Kongers diaspora now, as they fled to the Britain, Canada, elsewhere. Recent polling found that 14% of would-be immigrants already say Hong Kong is too unsafe for them ever to return. One Hong Konger now living in, I think, Germany. She said to him she was too concerned for her own safety to go back to Hong Kong, even to visit her dying mother, saying, Hong Kong was a place when I was young to receive refugees, and now we've become refugees. It's a very complicated feeling and difficult for the self-esteem of Hong Kong people. You know, he hesitates a little bit in his piece, saying Hong Kong is, you know, definitely gone without the prospect of returning to pre-communist China Hong Kong. But he basically says, you know, that the chances are slim and virtually none.
He's right. Hong Kong is finished as a country that has rule of law and freedom of speech and human rights. The Chinese government has taken them over in a very brutal way, and it's not going to go back. The question becomes, what happens to Taiwan? Is Taiwan next? Is Taiwan the next Hong Kong? You know, China got away with it in Hong Kong. Everyone assumed that would never happen. Why would they kill the goose that was laying the golden egg, the major supporter of financial investment and technology and intellectual property was coming through Hong Kong into China? Why would the Chinese do it? But they did it. And so then the question becomes, what will they do with Taiwan? They've said that Taiwan is part of China. They're going to invade Taiwan. They've even put out a three-part plan of how they're going to take over Taiwan. And this is the 100th anniversary of the founding of the Chinese Communist Party. They plan to own Taiwan. And in fact, even yesterday, the Chinese president said to Japan that if you try to interfere with us taking Taiwan, the nuclear weapons are going to fly, and you will face a second nuclear annihilation and unconditional surrender.
And you said on Fox we should fight back by pulling out of the Beijing Olympics.
I think what we should do is say that we're not going to the Beijing Olympics until the following conditions are made. You know, lay off Taiwan, stop hacking America. And there are so many things that we could do to pressure Hong Kong, I mean, to pressure China on all these abuses they're doing, particularly against Americans by the ransomware attacks and the cyber attacks that even Joe Biden came out yesterday and said, oh, we know the Chinese government is behind the most egregious cyber attacks on American industries. Well, okay, so what's the plan? Joe Biden seems to think by issuing a strong statement the Chinese are going to be so intimidated that they're going to go back in their shell and they're going to stop hacking, they're not going to go after Taiwan, they're going to be really good guys. Well, those days are gone. You know, I think the Biden administration is living in some fairyland of the past.
Maybe
the day when the United States could dictate to other countries what they should and could do is long gone, especially for China.
Maybe we could do some soft diplomacy like LeBron James doing screenings of Space Jam 2 or something to repair relations between the two countries.
I'm assuming that was sarcasm.
Yeah, that's sarcasm. although you never know in these times. But so Hong Kong's importance, the fall of Hong Kong, because this just hasn't been very much remarked upon. And it is such a tragedy if you believe in free people living freely. And also America's posture towards revanchism, whether you see it with Putin in Crimea or you see it with the Chi-Coms in Hong Kong. What are we doing?
Nothing. Issuing strong statements. And the problem with international relations is think of it like a shark tank. You know, if countries smell blood in the water, if your competitors smell blood in the water, they all zoom in to take their bite out of the fish. And we're the fish. And they all sense weakness. That Joe Biden, when he goes to Russia and he goes to Geneva and puts down a red line when he says to Vladimir Putin, don't you dare have cyber attacks against industries 1 through 16. Well, that's an open invitation to go after Industry 17 on up. There'll be no consequence. And when the Russians did the inevitable, which has started doing hack attacks, cyber attacks on number 1 through 16, you know, what was the plan? You don't issue red lines, you don't issue threats unless you plan to carry them out. But I think, again, the Biden administration is living in a golden past when they thought America was the richest country and the most powerful country in the world, and we could borrow money and nobody would care. They would happily lend it to us, when we could tell countries, just by shaming them in public, we want you to do this or else, and we'd never have to come up with the for or else. The Chinese are laughing. I mean, the Chinese have every, and they're very open about it. They plan to replace the United States within the decade as the dominant world power, rewrite the rules of order in the world so that all the things that you just mentioned, Dan, you know, freedoms, freedom of speech, all the things that we think are basic human rights, they will no longer be basic human rights, not only in China, but around the world.
She is KT McFarland, former First Deputy National Security Advisor of President Trump, author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Amy, and thanks, Dan.
Thank you, and she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Coming up on Chicago's Morning Answer.
At 7:37, our weekly conversation with Ted Dabrowski from wirepoints.org. We'll start with Jelly Belly announcing his plans to be reelected.
And I have to give you $100.
Mike Manapkin runs the Democratic House floor for 30-plus years of running. He's promising this and he's stealing that. Where can you get that kind of money? He's using your house like his own piggy bank. You ought to know by now. You can pay off your house here in Illinois, but you can never keep up with the taxes. Oh, how it's always been the plan to have a taxpayer pay, no doubt. Not a matter of if anymore, but when. You're moving out. When
Dan and Amy, it's that time of the week for our conversation with Ted Dabrowski, the president at WirePoints, wirepoints.org, all things policy related in Illinois. And Ted, before we begin with politics and policy in Illinois, Ted Dabrowski.
Yeah.
Ted Dabrowski.
Bad boy Ted Dabrowski.
You know, this
Wait, what's
is,
coming? What's coming?
Well, this
I
is,
know. I don't know either,
this
Ted.
This is not going to help the Polish jokes.
Uh-huh.
Poland sends six swimmers home from Tokyo after selecting too many athletes to compete in the games by mistake. The Polish Swimming Federation selected 23 athletes for the games where only 17 are allowed to participate.
Ruh-roh, Ted, what happened, Ted?
It reminds me of the old Polish joke. I'll risk my career here with the Polish joke.
All right. Hopefully this is funny, unlike your other jokes.
Well, this is an old one. 747 crashes into a Polish cemetery. So far, Polish authorities have recovered 2,000 bodies. Zing. Thank you.
Oh, jeez.
Would you like to, you know, offer some defense for your motherland?
I won't offer defense. I just used to tell Polish jokes all the time when I was young, so this just adds fuel to the fire.
Right. Have you ever heard that joke before, Ted?
I'd never heard that one.
Do you think it's
He's
funny?
Heard all the others.
Or do you find it offensive?
Yeah.
Oh, I love, you know, I like offense, so it's okay.
Everybody should be ridiculed. That's myself included. That's my mantra.
Exactly.
Speaking of ridicule, Jelly Belly, he's this heaving hog of life that occupies the governor's mansion in Illinois. He announced yesterday to no one's surprise except Amy Jacobson that he is running for reelection.
Do you want to hear a little bit of it?
I'm sure. Just a little, though.
Okay, just a little for a
morsel.
Big
guy. Yeah.
When I ran for governor 4 years ago, I could not have imagined that I would end up leading the state through a global pandemic.
Oh,
look, I may not have gotten every decision right.
But I love you.
But at every step
love
along
me.
The way,
Please
I followed
love me.
The science.
And then he
focused.
And then he what?
Then he ripped off his shirt and made love to the camera like an animal, Ted.
Man, well, you know, yeah. no surprise he's running. I think the stars have aligned for him. He's got peace in his legislature, you know, which he's done well to work well with them, you know, passing all the things they've passed. He's got good news on the credit upgrades. He's got $150 billion from the federal government, so it's all aligned for him, and it's easy for him to keep moving forward. He's got pretty decent numbers, so it's going to be a big challenge to take him down.
Well, the entire 3-minute video, centered on the pandemic and nothing else that happened during his first term in office.
And it was only 3 minutes because then the microwave went off and he had to leave.
But if we go back and we roll back, or re-implement some of these mask mandates and lockdowns, that's not going to help him politically.
Well, I think, Dan, I was listening to you guys, you and Amy, talk about the Republican Party and is there any chance? Is there any competition? Is there any alignment? Well, there may not be, but I think this is probably the clearest moment I've seen in a long time for delineation between bad policy and good policy. We could call that Republican versus Democrat, but certainly good policy versus bad policy. And let me see if I can rip off a few. One side closed schools, the other side wanted to open schools. One side wanted to put the teachers' union first. The others wanted to put students first. One side wanted to defund the police. The other one wanted good police. One wanted lockdowns. One wanted reopenings. One wants critical race theory. The other one wants critical thinking. One thinks that criminals are victims, and the other one thinks criminals are criminals. It's a huge delineation of policy and direction. But I think only one side can verbalize it.
Yeah, you should think about maybe trying to get an audience with whatever constitutes the Republican Party, because they clearly need the messaging help. And that about boils it down, doesn't it? You have to be willing to take up these fights. And again, there just doesn't seem much appetite, because there isn't much evidence that these fights are going to be taken up by anybody in any serious fashion.
Well, what's interesting is the press doesn't give it much attention. Pritzker's done a great job of shutting down the carnival barkers and having the media, get in line. Uh-huh. And I think that the facts are out there. I mean, they're fascinating facts, and the data is excellent. But does anybody have the wherewithal to really push and fight and make noise and have the money too, which is another big thing, given that Pritzker, can put in $170 million or whatever he wants to put in like he did last time.
Yeah, but there are diminishing marginal returns to money. If you're doing something interesting, the money will come to get your message out.
Agreed.
You mentioned the issue of crime and the non-prosecution, particularly of repeat violent offenders. As CWB Chicago reporting just yesterday, the Lou prepares to break annual shooting record, they talk about some of the more recent gunfights and gangland shootings, including the gangland shooting where 4 young women were injured over the weekend. This becomes a state issue, too, because Chicago and the state are so inextricably linked. This seems to be something that could be leveled up for a statewide conversation and not just in the form of, gosh, have you heard what's going on in Chicago? That place is up for grabs. A little bit more than that.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, if you look at the suburbs, right? I mean, you could even extend to there where people are scared. One side is people are scared to go into the city now. So it is a suburban mm-hmm. issue. Then you got places like Harvey, which are reaching record numbers. Galesburg the other day announced that they have record murders. This is everywhere, and a lot of it has to do with the new law that was passed that basically makes crime, I'd say, easier, or makes policing harder. People want more policing. People want more protection. Of course, the other side says that's not true, and I think that, again, it just opens up the door to, one, to great messaging, and two, to better policy. I mean, I think the politics and the policy really line up here.
And they're not going to prosecute you in Chicago unless, it's $1,000 or more.
Well, yeah, I mean, I still find fascinating the 64 shots that were fired just outside the courthouse, or whatever it was, the jail.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rapper.
Boldness.
Yeah, apparently he was targeted, according to the Tribune's reporting.
Yeah, it was so obvious he was targeted. But yes, the 65 rounds were fired.
Yeah, it's a rumor that he was targeted.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You think he was?
Yeah. So let's talk about schools here, since that seems to be where, if there's any activity going on, it's around schools and what school policy is going to be come the fall, come next month, really.
Yeah.
And so U46, which is the second biggest school district behind CPS in the region and is also a disaster, Terrible school district. Awful school district. I feel bad for the parents relegated to and the students relegated to that school system. They wouldn't allow parents into the meeting to talk about mask policy unless they wore a mask. Nice way to sort of freeze out opposition. And so, you know, your recommendation, this is U46, Wheaton, Nutrier, all the examples.
Naperville.
What would you suggest, and, you know, from what you're seeing and the interactions you've had with school officials where you live, for parents who, you know, want to do something to make sure that this school year is more productive than last?
Well, I think the one of U46, I mean, I was seeing the other day in the press, what was it, 200, Wheaton, you know, all those parents showed up. Is a big, big group of parents. I think in a place like U46, which is a massive school district, I would imagine that they could amass quite a few people and hold a rally at this stage. I think the rallies have been pretty powerful. And, you know, if they're going to force, when you know, in a situation where so many people are vaccinated now, especially in the suburbs, right, we've got 90% of all adults ages 65 and over with at least one shot. So either the school districts are in support of vaccination or they're anti-vaxxers. They're acting like they're anti-vaxxers. So this is a moment where we have to just rise together, start holding rallies if necessary, and exert pressure. I think there's enough people out there to do it.
And we did last night because they wouldn't even let them in outside of District 46. They're wearing all red and they would not let them in. And I just, you know, the problem a lot of parents have with masks is that it's detrimental to learning. And it's needless. And the science and the data isn't there to keep masking our kids for what the rest of their lives, it seems like.
Oh, yeah, I think it's absurd. You know, I went to church on Sunday and, you know, nobody had masks on. Of course, some adults did, whoever wants to. But most people, you know, whatever it was, 90-something% didn't have masks on. But the acolytes, they did. They were forced to have masks on. And it's an absurd policy where the ones who don't get sick, you know, I saw some 2- and 4-year-olds on July 4th going to the beach. They were masked. Their parents weren't. It's an absurdity because there is no risk to those kids, and adults who want to be vaccinated are. It just makes zero sense. It's surreal, really.
Now, speaking of making zero sense, CPS recently unveiled its $9 billion budget for the coming fiscal year. So that's about $28,000 per kid in CPS. That's a lot more than most suburban school districts spend per pupil. You over at Wire Points did a little back of the envelope math too as to property taxes and spending and K-12 generally speaking in Illinois, comparing, you know, states that are run a little bit differently and what that would look like if Illinois was run a little bit differently.
Yeah, it's fascinating. We looked at the U.S. Census at the spending per state, and what we found is that Illinois, and then we'll get to CPS in a second, but Illinois spends about 70% more, $7,000 almost, than Florida, and about $6,000 more than Indiana. So that's a lot of money. And yet their results are actually better. You know, their outcomes, their national testing scores are better than Illinois. So we're spending massive amounts of money here. And, you know, again, the question is, for what? Do we know for what? CPS takes it further, right, with all this COVID money coming in. They'll be at $27,000 this year. That, of course, includes capital and debt repayment and stuff like that, but it's a massive number. And we know what's happening is we are empowering, by paying all that extra money, we're empowering the unions, we're paying them a lot more, we're giving them much more, there's much more at stake for them because we pay them so much through their salaries, through their pensions, that you know, they're fighting back, and that's why they're fighting back tooth and nail to keep their control.
And the CTU, I don't know if you saw their list of demands. They want, I mean, it's the same old, but they want 4,000 new positions added because they want a piece of the pie, Ted. They want some of these COVID federal funds, and they want to help people in low-income housing to pay their rent and to pay mortgages of people who work for CPS. It's ridiculous.
Well, I like this. You know, this is all temporary spending, as Jim Urio said earlier, right? This temporary becomes permanent, so...
Mm. And this against the backdrop, you're talking about the pension benefits, the seven-figure pensions guaranteed, these defined benefit plans. Illinois' pension system, second worst funded in the nation now?
That's right. You know, New Jersey's the worst, but it's all a matter of how you calculate that. New Jersey and Illinois are both both the same bankruptcy level. It's just a competition for worst. No, I think, you know, what's interesting about our crisis right now is that all this federal money flooded in. And so all these problems we're having and all these cultural problems are, let's say, somewhat dampened by the fact that there's a lot of money sloshing around to fund them. But, you know, in 2 years from now, when the money dries up, then it's going to be really interesting because we're going to have a fight not only over the culture issues, but who's paying for them, because the taxes are going to go up. And that's going to, you know, highlight or heighten the battle. And I think it's going to get interesting then, even more interesting than it is now.
Well, in 2 years, J.B. Pritzker will be running for president of the United States, so we won't have time to focus on things like the fiscal order of the state of Illinois. But, okay, yeah, we'll talk to you in 2 years about it. No big deal. Ted Dabrowski, president of WirePoints, WirePoints.org. Ted, thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
You want to hear another classic Polish joke?
Oh, boy. I mean, are you trying to get fired? But okay.
Why? No, Ted Dabrowski cleared it. He's Polish.
All right, fine. Then if, with his blessing, please say the joke.
A Polish guy walks up to the counter, asks for 5 pounds of Polish sausage. The clerk says, "So, are you Polish?" The Pole says, "Are you some kind of bigot? What if I came in here and asked for 5 pounds of Italian sausage? Would you assume I'm Italian? Or bratwurst, would you assume I'm German? What the hell's wrong with you?" And the clerk says, "Well, nothing. It's just that this is a hardware store."
Get fired.
Quinn's laughing. George, is that funny to you? Anybody?
Moderately.
That's a that's classic joke construction. That is a solid joke. See, that is a solid B-plus joke.
It's not funny. I think you're doing a live read here.
I'm sorry, don't have a sense of humor. What?
We don't. We don't have a sense of humor.
All right. Well, read whatever you got to read.
Who's live reading? Oh, it is mine. It's Permasealed.
Oh, imagine that.
So a Swede walks into a radio station and says, huh?
Yeah.
Any more jokes, Dan, or what do you got?
No, I just, you know, for a couple classic. You know, didn't you guys ever tell jokes as kids, like all the ethnic jokes?
I told knock-knock jokes.
That's so lame.
Knock-knock. Oh, God. See, it's so beneath you if you say, who's there?
Who's there? Who's there?
Banana.
Oh, God.
Banana who?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Banana.
Banana
knock,
who?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Orange. Orange, you glad I didn't call you banana? Can I get anything? Anybody? Anybody?
And I enter this as another exhibit in my women are not funny case. In chief. I rest my case on that, actually.
What difference at this point does it make?
Coming up on Chicago's Morning Answer.
We'll have stories of sex at the Olympics with our correspondent Amy Jacobson at 8:08. Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. All right, now we've done it. I've done it. With my classic, very good Polish jokes. I'm spawning the likes of Mike from the North Side to pile on. Mike, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. I walked into a bar on Milwaukee Avenue. I asked the bartender for a Polish 13. She said, "What's that, 7 and 7? She got mad. She said 7 and 7 was 16. Well, everyone started laughing, and they said, "Tell us some more Polish jokes." This big guy comes over to me, and he says, "He's 7 feet tall and 400 pounds. His brother's 7'3 and 420 pounds. And his nephew's 7'6 and 500 pounds. Do I want to tell any more Polish jokes?" I said, "Of course not. I don't want to have to repeat them 3 times.
Hi-yo!
Hey, Amy. I have an Iowa joke for you, Amy.
Oh, sure. I'd love to hear it.
Same difference.
Hey.
No, what does an Iowa college girl do after sex?
Oh,
she climbs in the front seat.
All right. Thanks for the call, Mike. Well,
of the tractor.
Just to expand the circle then, I don't, you know, want Polish people to feel like they're being unfairly picked on. But it was, you know, the Polish Swimming Federation has sort of gave us this opportunity. Remember yesterday you talked about these anti-sex cardboard beds in the Olympic Village?
And then I took a look at them with the kids and... well, it's just showing my kids, like, do you think that this is, you could sustain, like, with their weight, lay on a bed like that and not have it collapse?
Well, an Irish gymnast, of course, the Irish.
Because the Irish are known for their gymnastics.
Irish gymnast Reese McClenahan took to Twitter to debunk the theory. He jumped up and down on his bed, say, yes, they're made out of cardboard, but they're apparently meant... They're not meant to break. Well, they're supposedly they're going to any sudden moves they break. But it's fake news. It's fake news as he's jumping up and down his bed and filming it.
So I think we got suckered into some fake news, courtesy of the New York Post, which published that story yesterday saying they're anti-sex beds, meaning if there's two people on them, they will collapse. Well, because sex is a huge, huge problem at the Olympics. I don't know if I mean a problem, but it's rampant. A lot of people. Well, I covered the Olympics and Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. So I was in Salt Lake City for a while. Then I was
Ryan Lochte. Is that what happened?
No, I'm just saying that. And then I was up in oh my God, why can't it?
Ryan Lochte. I'm giving you and Mike Uzzaroni from the Do You Believe in Miracles team in 1980. What happened?
No, I'm saying that it's rampant that athletes sleep with other athletes. They sleep with members of the media sleep together. It's pretty. That's why they hand out thousands of condoms. At the Brazil games, they handed out 1,800 condoms to the participants and members of the media.
1,800. Well, did you count them out?
No, that's I was just perusing through and seeing what was going on.
I pumped those numbers up. Those are rookie numbers.
Of course, you were just perusing through. You were a Scrivener. You're there to document what's happening on the passing scene.
I didn't partake in any of that lawlessness, but it was...
You and Carl Lewis, what happened? You and Bob Beeman, what happened?
Who was big when I was there? Oh, that Carrot
Top
guy.
You and Jesse Owens?
No, the Carrot Top. It was the Winter Olympics. The snowboarder crew. It was free love.
You and Tony Hawk? Was it skateboarding at an Olympic sport during Tony Hawk's time?
It's snowboarding, which I meant to say.
Tony Hawk. That's why I asked if skateboarding. Yeah.
Skateboarding now is a sport this summer. Are you guys, is anybody going to watch? The Olympics start on Friday.
You and Rory McIlroy, what happened? Golf is an Olympic sport.
Yeah, that's right. What else? Karate is this year. I don't know.
You and Vlade Divac, what happened?
I said no. You can say that these days. But they're trying to discourage people from having sex because of COVID. They don't want it to spread. Mm-hmm. I told you there's a sexually transmitted element to the COVID.
Yeah.
There is.
Yeah.
You're breathing in each other's air.
Yeah.
312-642-5600 turnkey.pro answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Olympic officials have banned lovemaking in the Olympic Village in Tokyo.
Oh, who's on the sex police unit? Oh, and knowing them, I'm sure they probably secretly have cameras in rooms and they'll come and get you.
Former table tennis star Matthew Syed, what did you guys do? He's 50.
That's in my wheelhouse.
Admitted he wasn't always an attractive prospect to the opposite sex. Yeah, I know you play ping pong, dude. Of course, you're at the Olympic Village. You're the ping pong guy. Come on. However, he said it didn't matter at Barcelona, where he made his Olympic debut. He said he had more sex in his time in the village than he had in his entire life before that moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm often asked if the Olympic Village, the vast restaurant and housing conglomeration that hosts the world's top athletes for the duration of the games, is the sex fest it's cracked up to be. My answer is always the same. Too right it is. I played my first games in 1992 and got to more action in those 2.5 weeks than the rest of my life up to that point and probably since.
People throw themselves at Olympic athletes because it's really a small village when you think about it. And they wear their gold medals to the bars and it's a chick magnet.
It's like when I used to wear my shower clock to the bars when I was a breakdancer.
Flavor Flav? What do you? Yeah.
Interesting. Tom Sedaka in Barrington.
Oh, good morning, morning zoo.
Yeah, and seriously.
That was just joke morning.
Yeah.
I'll just let me just give you the punchline, and then you can build it out from there. But it, Stash, of course you're not going to get me, girls. You got to put the potato in the front of your pants.
Hey-o.
Have a great day.
Stash. All right. Carl on the south side.
Amy?
Yeah?
You specifically said you did not have sex with any athletes.
I did not.
So the question's got to be,
how was Michael
Phelps?
Carrot
Top any good?
Yeah. It wasn't Carrot Top. It's that...
The kid with the red hair that... He was nice. I interviewed him.
Thanks for the call, Carl.
Oh, my God. What's his name? He looks like Carrot Top, but he does the snowboard half pint.
Half pint. You cover the Olympics. I remember your Olympic coverage. It was very hard to decipher. Wonder
Eric
why that
and Kathy
is.
Dared us to go buy a keg in Wyoming, so I did.
You guys are fun.
We are fun.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, what a hoot.
So sorry I wasn't there for that.
Oh, Sean White.
Sean White, yeah.
You know, Sean, you know. Sean White.
Yeah.
George Glass.
Nice try, Sean.
Uh-huh. What happened with you and Doug Collins in the 1972 games? I want to know.
I'm not that old. But don't you think that's a little... I mean, is this the first you're learning about this?
No, this is an evergreen story. This is a story that's always told. First of all, yeah, I know there's a lot of athletes in good shape and all that stuff, but a lot of them are ugly, too.
You know what?
And I'm not just talking about the East German, you know, female/male weightlifting team.
But when you're a winner, you're hot. So chicks throw themselves at you, thinking you're, you know, going to get big money endorsements and things like that.
What? Mary Lou Retton. You and Mary Lou, what happened?
Just so you know, I made a mistake. This year they handed out 160,000 condoms.
Where and it was only 1,800 when you went?
In Brazil, it was 450,000.
Oh, it's, you know, just
because it's Brazil.
Again, the Olympic correspondent, just a slight rounding error. That's about right for Chicago media. 450,000. It's like talking about how much we spend on K-12 education.
I was wrong.
Yeah, no, just
I mean, they don't want athletes
barely.
To have sex. That's why they set up these cardboard beds. But yet they still hand it out.
Yeah.
Are still handing out 160,000 condoms.
All right. If you're not going to tell us what happened between you and Katrina Vitt, then we're going to move on. gymnastics, the most highly anticipated Olympic sport.
Yeah, of course.
62% of respondents said they're somewhat or very interested in watching gymnastics, which, of course, is headlined by Simone Biles. Top five.
Can I guess?
Yes, you can.
Synchronized swimming. I love synchronized swimming.
I swimming, but not synchronized.
No. They're swimming, diving, and then there's synchronized swimming. It's the bet with the caps and the legs. And
I know the difference. I saw Caddyshack. I'm talking about what's in the top five. It's not synchronized swimming. It's
okay.
Swimming. It's like the, you know, the Michael Phelps events. It's not
okay.
Your...
What about diving? That's got to be in the top five.
That's number three.
Track and field.
That's number four.
What else is good? Karate.
No, it's just your wheelhouse.
Volleyball. Oh, beach volleyball for
beach
sure.
Volleyball.
Everybody loves to watch beach volleyball.
But did you see with the thing, with the uniforms, the bikini bottoms? And
what
there's some of these, you know, women are protesting and they wore those Umbro shorts instead of the bikini bottoms. But
they're not going to be able to be... It's agile. They're not going to. That's going to hold them back. I'm not kidding you.
No. In addition,
you want to go with the bikini briefs.
In addition, beach volleyball will fall out of the top 10 if they change the uniforms.
I want to see these new uniforms. Beach volleyball.
They're
okay.
Not new uniforms. It was a protest for the, you know.
Oh, for them. For
yeah, it was a protest over them because you know, some people may just be watching beach volleyball to
stare at the buttocks.
Yes, the buttocks. Steve and Niles, yes.
Yeah, is there a new event called the Banger Event?
The Banger Event. All right, Steve. Thanks for
maybe
that
in 4 years.
I feel uncomfortable when when craggly old Steve calls and starts using words like banging. Makes me feel weird.
Go for the gold.
Look at them heading home after their dirty, filthy hookups.
Dan and Amy, all right. This show has sort of gone off the rails. We got
you know it's all right though. We need
jokes.
A break.
We got Olympic sex. And when I think Olympic sex, I think Sean from Elmwood Park.
Oh, yeah.
Why are you calling our show? Don't you have your own show? Why are you horning in on our action?
Listen, this is the show that I got started on, so I'm fond of it, and I listen to it.
Actually, you got started on Hate Saturdays on a different station, but anyway.
Actually true.
Yeah.
Yes, it is, but with another woman that you had partnered.
Yes, exactly. Listen, different woman, yeah.
This is how old men end up in the passenger seat looking like a scared rescue dog on his way to the vet. Get control of this relationship. You understand, Prof? Rein her back in. Mm-mm. Now, Amy.
Yes?
Loose lip. Sink ships. So if I was that strapping husband of yours, when you got home, there would just be a note saying, don't call me anymore. No one wants to be reminded of the trollop they married. All right?
Yeah.
So get it back in control.
All right. All right. Thanks for the call, Sean.
I do appreciate that about Sean, and I love him for it.
So what did happen with you and Usain Bolt?
It was the Winter Olympics.
You and the Jamaican bobsled team.
Oh, I did interview them. Nothing happened. I swear to God.
Did you get to interview John Candy, too? Because, you know, cool runnings.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the movie. Yeah.
No, everybody all went to the same bars in Park City. It was a close-knit community.
Mm-hmm.
I met Dave Chappelle. He was there. Nice guy. Nothing happened. Nothing happened.
Was
Mario Lopez there?
Was or Castillo from Miami Vice?
Oh, my God. Edward James Olmos. Why do you have to bring that up?
You're the one who told the world.
It was a mistake.
You say
okay,
something
just,
like
I don't want
you
talk
say
about
something
it.
Like that, right. And then you expect it never to be brought up again. What about Tommy Lee Jones from U.S. Marshals?
No, I hung out with him for 12 hours when we made that scene.
Uh-huh. Love scene?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The love scene. Yeah.
It's hot. Uh-huh. Steve in Northwest Indiana.
It got cut
Indiana.
Out of the movie, though. Darn it.
Yeah. Cutting room floor.
Oh, Amy, do you want to come back to my motel room?
Okay, you kind of sound like him, man.
Who is that?
What do you call What do you call six Polish guys wearing turbans?
Oh my God! Now it's giving even worse. Now why you have to?
A pack of Stanleys.
Not bad. All right, pack of Stanleys. All right, pretty good. Thanks for the call, Steve. It made up for that terrible impersonation. That was supposed to be Edward James Olmos.
Mm-hmm.
That's supposed to be Jaime Escalante. Edward James Olmos is Jaime Escalante teaching kids calculus. Come on, Steve. You're better than that. All right. All right.
Wait, real quick, though. What Olympic event are you looking forward to?
Mark Spitz. What happened between you and Mark Spitz?
You're digging deep. All right. Coming up on Chicago's Morning Answer.
At 8:38, we have to return to the kind of topic you've come to expect from serious people that are offering value to the listener.
Okay, fine. We have to learn something every day.
Exactly. This legislation that Democrat socialists have introduced to rename more than 1,000 forests, lakes, and mountain peaks with alleged racist slurs or offensive language. I wonder if Lincoln Park is on the list. We'll start there at 8:38.
But now let's head into the newsroom. Mike Scott, all tanned and relaxed from vacation. What do you look forward to for the Olympics?
Sorry. Wrong button. Everything. I'm an Olympics nerd.
Oh, I love watching the Olympics. It is appointment a television.
So I'm Dutch, and I grew up with these jokes, so I can tell them. Why do the Dutch walk so loudly?
The wooden shoes.
Because they have wooden shoes.
There you go.
That's not a joke.
Damn prop for the win.
They award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
What do the Dutch do with their cheese? They eat them.
Oh, man.
Wow.
I
need another one.
What is it?
No. That's
give me
a tilting at windmills joke in there somewhere?
Yeah. Maybe.
Tulips.
I don't know. Tulips.
Coming up next, it's me, Mike Gallagher, right after Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Democrat socialists have introduced a bill to rename more than 1,000 forests, lakes, and mountain peaks. Name with racist slurs or offensive language. This the brainchild of socialists Elizabeth Warren, Ed Markey, and Representative Al Green. For example, there is about 621 places have the word Negro in them.
That's got to go.
Why? United Negro College Fund, should that go too?
Oh, good point.
I think context matters. So if this was, in the context of what black people were referred to at the time, referred to themselves of at the time, read the writings of civil rights leaders in the 60s. That's one thing. If it's you know, leveled as a pejorative, that's another thing. New Mexico is home to a reservoir called Wetback Tank. Okay, I could see that going. You know, so some of the stuff that's, you know, obviously derogatory and salacious. Okay. But, you know, it's all of the kind of rewriting American history. And by the way, this isn't just me or just conservatives saying it and concerned about it. It's also leftists like Ken Burns, the great documentarian. He is a great documentarian, but he's a man on the left. And there are historians, men on the left and women on the left, who include the historians in academia who've decried the historical inaccuracy of the 1619 Project. Ken Burns recently had this to say, for example, the complicated legacy of Robert E. Lee. Since all Robert E. Lee statues have to come down, and it was, you know, the site of the ugliness in Charlottesville. This is Ken Burns on Robert E. Lee, and another Democrat hero, Democrat socialist hero for a time, Woodrow Wilson.
Well, I think the Robert E. Lee is a really complicated one. I like to see his statues at the places where they should be interpreted in battlefields. He himself was very, very clear on it, and I might hide behind his academic robes as president of Washington College, which became Washington and Lee after his death. And he said, make no monuments to the Confederacy, will only breed bitterness. And I think his nightmare has come true in that regard. I think I've always said most of my professional life that the most overrated president was Woodrow Wilson, and we deserve to hear a much more complicated and I think more interesting, if at times dark, story about a person who resegregated a civil service that had steadily after the Civil War been integrated. And so there's lots to discuss.
Yeah, lots to discuss indeed. And so this is not, as some on the left try to project for purposes of hiding in plain sight, a fear of an unwillingness to contemplate American history, warts and all. It just simply is not. From conservatives who do not want American history just expunged and we start tomorrow, day one, which is what the neo-Marxists want and what they're doing. And this is part of it, what these Democrat socialists in Congress are doing, too. You know, Ken Burns speaks of our history as Americans.
Somehow we're now certain that our children can't stand anything but a sanitized Madison Avenue version of our history, when in fact we're enriched by the variety and that complexity and the undertow. We understand the nuances of who we are in a much better way when we pursue what we've tried to do, stories and facts and voices, however varied they might be.
Yeah, the kids are treated as so fragile because the adults are sentimental barbarians. And so they pass it on. One example, did you see the woman who was caught on video tearing down two statues at a church in Queens?
No.
She's hitting one of the Blessed Mother, Mary, the other of St. Therese, the little flower, the Carmelite nun, with a hammer, stomping on the statues, spitting on them, and then fleeing the scene. Yeah, that's what you get. The neo-Jacobins, the Clockwork Orange kids on the streets, given license to destroy things they don't understand. This is given the imprimatur of legitimacy by some of the most popular institutions in America, like the NFL. You've heard the word that the NFL will have two national anthems before each game. The so-called Black National Anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing, and the National Anthem. And as Rich Lowry writes in National Review, I think, persuasively. Why does this matter? A nation is, to a large extent, defined by its symbols and associations, the holidays, the rituals, heroes, and history, the mystic chords of memory that constitute its collective self-understanding. This is how a nation tells itself what it is and what its priorities should be. So what is having two national anthems in the most watched sport in America? What is it? What's the message that that sends? I mean, the implication
that
is
we're not United States of America, that we have two different Americas.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. It's worse than that. The implication by having the black national anthem sung is that the Star Spangled Banner is the white national anthem, isn't it? It's not true.
But right, but that's what it's implying. I mean,
how do you take away something other than that as the it's the implication?
Did you some know, group ask for the black national anthem to be played? I mean, was there some threat of a boycott if they didn't play it, or they just proactively went out there and said, you know what, this is what we're going to do because we want to be really woke. And we'll play the black national anthem first. Or are they going to play the national anthem first?
It's the order is secondary. I talked about this yesterday. You know this is going to end badly. And so what does it say about the people promoting this? This is just, you know, the cost of a just revolution in America. Is that what you tell yourself or those who support this sort of deconstruction of America tell you to rationalize their support? You know it's going to end badly. You know racial orders don't work to build community. They work to tear at the fabric of community. And so what does it say about those pushing and acquiescing to the demands of Marxists like the Black Lives Matter crowd? Mary at Midway, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Oh, hello. I'm calling because you mentioned Ken Burns, and I know this stuff is always so awkward, so you're probably going to have to fix it up for me. But anyway, I remember seeing his documentary on the Civil War, and I was interested by the fact he said, he documented it, and he said, okay, so all the slaves were, you know, freed from their plantations and, you know, those white people with their mansions. And he goes, but the fact was, one-third of them actually kind of turned around and said, well, can we go back to our, and I'm not going to use that word, but can we go back to our, they were like in their head, well, I kind of want to go back to that family I was with. And I always thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, yeah, thanks for coming. I don't think that had, I think, yeah, I mean, you know, there's something problematic in the human condition, which is why America is such a departure from the world as we knew it before America, which is that most people, this is a general statement, and we've seen it play out during COVID, most people will trade freedom for safety, freedom for security.
Yeah, we've watched that played out the past 16 months.
And you get neither, as Benjamin Franklin observed, but, and I'm not, you know, safety, I'm not comparing, you know, freedom for safety in the COVID context to slavery, obviously. I'm not saying they'll trade a bondage for quote-unquote safety, but I mean that mentality is at play. And that you're right, that Burns did document that in his Civil War series. Deborah in Arlington Heights.
Good morning. I hate to say that this is never going to be resolved, but it isn't, because it all boils down to leftists hating Donald Trump. That's what it always goes back to. That's in the forefront of their mind, no matter how bad things look. And if you point out things are wrong, it doesn't matter. They gloss over it, or their eyes glaze over, because they just refuse to let go.
Thanks for the call, Deborah. Well, you're always going to have those who want to tear down. You're always going to have those affiliated with toxic ideologies like Marxism. The question is, what do civilized, intelligent, otherwise intelligent people do in response? How do you let yourself get taken over by a band of Bolsheviks? That's the question. If there's always going to be those people, it's how you confront them and dispatch them. That's the question. If you do it all. Tom in Naperville.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
Good.
My question is, as long as we're rewriting history to make people feel good, why don't we just rewrite history without any reference to slavery? That way, everybody will feel good because slavery never happened.
Right. All right. Thanks for the call, Tom. I mean, yeah, right. If you could.
Hypothetically.
No, he's pointing out an absurdity by being absurd. Yes, that's the absurdity of it all. Parallel. Jim in South Elgin.
You know, my friends are asking me now, what's the NFL? What's the NBA?
Not for long if they keep acting like this, to borrow from Jerry Glanville. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, anyways, you know, they were saying last year, major sports lost something like $14 billion. You're going to keep on sliding down.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I don't agree. Thanks for the call, Jim. Yeah, I think you've seen some short-term hits that have been taken.
Oh, the All-Star game got destroyed. Yeah. They went from 36 million at one point in time to 8 million viewers. I didn't even know it was on. I forgot. And who's in the NBA Finals? Oh, the Suns and the Bucks.
Yeah, look at the salaries. Look at the, you know, ratings during playoffs. NFL bounced back last year. Now, of course, we're locked down, so that was advantageous, I suppose. But it'll bounce back because we're sort of in this bread and circuses period. We don't have to confront the ugliness around us if we can be entertained. We're at this place, and I've referenced this before, too, that is quite precarious. Historian Livy talking about and predicting the end of the Roman Republic. And he said about 10 years before the Republic fell that Rome was at the point where it could no longer tolerate its ills or the cures. We can't tolerate what we're doing to ourselves. That's not sustainable. But we don't have the courage to apply the cures necessary. Doesn't that sound like a pretty good one-sentence description of where we're at, and at least in so many communities and states around the country? Not everywhere. So it won't be, perhaps if there is a collapse coming or a crack-up coming, it won't be the same everywhere. But you think you can indulge this sort of violent ignorance? The self-segregation, the imposition of a racial order with associated benefits and responsibilities without consequence? No, you can't. And it won't go down that way. So, you know, the question is, it's terrible. And you just muddle along and you try and encourage your school board to not make Johnny wear a mask in first grade. And, you know, call it a day. Well, hate to tell you. You know, the getting back into school, for example, and you could apply this to any other institution, that's the opener. That's just the opener. Then you get the real fight.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
All right. Thanks so much for making us part of your morning. Thanks to George Hoffman, who's been for Justin Kosick, and Quinn McCarthy, our executive producer. We are back here bright and early tomorrow morning at 5 a.m.